Good morning. It's lovely to see every one of you here this morning. Thank you for being here on this gorgeous day. I know there's many things we could be doing outside, so we especially appreciate you being here this morning. Please rise in body or spirit for our first hymn, hymn 188, Come, Come, Whoever We Are. And Jason and Michelle, are you going to lead us in a round?
That's one of my favorites. I love that one. Liam Langert will be lighting our chalice this morning. Please join me in reciting the words to our chalice lighting, which are printed in your order of service. With the kindling of this flame, we affirm our commitment to accept life's gifts with grace and gratitude, and use them to bless the world in the spirit of love. So good morning. My name is Sharon Laidlaw, and I am the lay worship leader this morning. We welcome you to Wildflower Church, a Unitarian Universalist congregation. Sharing this space with loving Christian neighbors means that some of their worship symbols, such as this cross, adorn our space. While Unitarian Universalism has its roots in liberal Christianity, today we believe that religious thought benefits from new insights and perspectives beyond any one religious tradition. We can also draw from philosophy, from science and the arts, from history and popular culture, and from nature. Our seven principles found in the first few pages of the hymnal unite us in support of each other as we actively shape the world for the better. As we begin our worship service today, please note that assisted hearing devices are available in the foyer, and if you'd like to use one, you can step out and a greeter will help you get set up with that. We want to extend a special welcome to our first time and returning visitors. After the service, please join us for refreshments and conversation in the community room, which is down the ramp in the building to the left as you exit the sanctuary. Now let's take a moment to say hello to those around us, especially those we may not know very well. Please join me in the responsive reading, which is printed in your order of service. I will read the standard print, and you will follow with the text in italics. To laugh is to risk appearing the fool. To weep is to risk appearing sentimental. To reach out for another is to risk exposing our true self. To place our ideas, our dreams before the crowd is to risk loss. To love is to risk not being loved in return. To hope is to risk despair. To try is to risk failure. To live is to risk dying.
I'd like to invite children of all ages forward for the time for all ages. And I want to thank the choir, Elke, Jason, and JJ for lovely music. Thank you very much. They come from all parts of the world. I'll move back. Good morning, everyone. Oh, I like your nails, Grace. Whoa. Well, it's an absolutely gorgeous sight to see every one of you here this morning. Thank you so much for being here. And I see we've brought some friends too. And that song is Brave. Probably a lot of you have heard that song. Have you heard it?
Yeah.
It's on the radio. It's a great song. It's one of my favorites. Well,
I've heard it so many times.
You've heard it so many times?
Because my mom.
Your mom was practicing it. Well, she sounded very good, didn't she? Thank you for practicing. Well, what we're talking about today is a difficult subject. We're talking about a word called trauma. And a lot of you might not know what trauma is, but trauma is where something happens to us that really impacts us over a long period of time. You may hurt yourself, like physically, and usually you can recover from that. Not always, but usually recover from that. But sometimes that pain from hurting yourself, it stays with you. And mentally, and you know, you've hurt feelings for a long time. So if this is a book about this, and it's called A Terrible Thing Happened by Margaret M. Holmes, and it's illustrated by Kerry Fillow, and it's about a raccoon. But most raccoons I know are black with white masks, and this is a brown one with a black mask. Have you ever seen a raccoon like that?
No,
I haven't either. And its name's Sherman. You've never seen a raccoon. Sometimes if you go out at night and you see your trash and there's an animal rustling around in it, it's often a raccoon. They go through my trash regularly. So this is Sherman Smith. Saw the most terrible thing. He was very upset. It really scared Sherman to see such a terrible thing. Sherman did not like the feeling so afraid. He did not want to remember what happened. So Sherman decided not to think about the terrible thing he saw. Sherman thought that would make him feel better. At first, the plan seemed to work. Sherman woke up every morning, he brushed his teeth, and he went to school. Sherman played with his friends, he teased his sister, and he walked his dog. He teased his sister. That's not good. Sure, none of you do that, do you? Everything seemed all right for a while, but something inside of Sherman was starting to bother him. You see, he's starting to get aggressive, and he shoved the rabbit out the way. He wouldn't normally do that. Sherman had to play more, run faster, and sing louder in order to forget the terrible thing he saw. Other things started happening to Sherman, too. Sometimes he did not feel hungry. You know how when you don't feel well, you maybe don't have an appetite? That was what was happening with Sherman. Sometimes his stomach hurt or his head hurt. Sometimes he felt sad, but he did not know why. Sometimes he was nervous for no reason at all. Sometimes he did not sleep very well. Sometimes when he did sleep, he had very bad dreams. The bad dreams scared Sherman. All of these things made Sherman angry. It seemed like Sherman was angry all the time. You know, sometimes I get angry, but usually it subsides. But you know, it's rare for me to be angry all the time. Sherman started crying. He started getting into trouble at school. Sometimes he felt so angry that he did mean things. Getting into trouble often made Sherman feel bad. I think he's gone to the principal there. Sherman did not understand all of his bad feelings. He felt confused. Sometimes parents help children figure out their feelings. Sometimes teachers or other grown-ups help. That is how Sherman met Miss Maple. Miss Maple helped Sherman think about his feelings. She listened while Sherman talked to her. They played while they talked. Sherman did not feel as mixed up when he talked to Miss Maple. Once when Sherman and Miss Maple were coloring, she told him to draw a picture of how he felt when he was angry. This seemed like a strange thing to draw, but Sherman did it. After that, Sherman drew lots of pictures, pictures of the pain in his stomach, pictures of the bad dreams he had, pictures of the fear he felt. And at last, pictures of the terrible things he saw. Sherman and Miss Maple talked about the pictures. He asked if the terrible things he saw was his fault. Sherman said, he worried a lot about that. No, Miss Maple told Sherman, it was not your fault. Sherman told Miss Maple a lot of things. He told her about the bad dreams. He told her how scared he felt. It was all very hard to do. Miss Maple was proud that Sherman was trying to talk about such hard things. Sherman found it felt good to let his feelings out. Feeling good helped Sherman feel stronger. When Sherman felt stronger, he did not feel so angry. Nothing can change the terrible thing that Sherman saw, but now he does not feel so mean. He is not so scared or worried. His stomach does not hurt as much, and the bad dreams hardly ever happen. Sherman Smith is feeling much better now. He just thought you would want to know. So have you ever felt a case where you are feeling bad and you help by talking to someone, like a friend or a parent? Anytime? Yes? Hi. Pardon? I'm just raising my hand. You felt that way. So, But think about that. Sometimes if you're really not feeling well or you're not quite sure, it's good to talk to someone about it. Talk to your family, sometimes your friends, sometimes your teacher. It's good to do that because we all have time. Sometimes things happen to us and we never know what happened to Sherman. And it's good to remember that many of the people we meet may have seen something bad and they're not feeling well. And it can help us just, you know, maybe be more patient with people who are angry or disappointed or annoying us. So thank you very much for listening. It's time for your religious education class. If you could walk to your class, that'd be great.
Good morning. I'm Dagmar Greeter, and this is a bit of trauma. Today is the day of our first fundraiser in a long time, and it happens at our house this evening. We open the doors at 5:30. If this is news to you, look the detail up in the newsletter or on the website or on our Facebook. There will be live music by the Austin Lounge Lizards. There will be food for all orientations. This is a fundraiser. Be generous, dig deep. But most of all, I hope you will have fun. I'll see you tonight.
I'd like to thank Dagmar and Michelle for all the work they've put into the fundraiser, and it should be a lot of fun. I'm going to be there. A few other announcements that we have. On April 15th, the board would like you to know that we're having a Future of Wildflower meeting from 9 o'clock till 3 o'clock here on April 15th. It's a Saturday. We are at an important point in the history of wildflower. We're at a turning point where we're really looking at what's our future going to be, what's the future of ministries going to be, our physical location is going to be. There's a lot of fundamental decisions that we need to make in the coming few months. And this is a chance for everyone here, whether you're a member, whether you're a visitor, whether you're exploring wildflower, to come along and make your opinions known. We want to hear from people. Things are going well. This is not a time to look at the problems. Things are going well. So this is a good time to consider our future. So hopefully you can be there. Talking of our future, one of the things we're beginning in April is some small group ministries. We've had about 30 people sign up for small group ministries. These are meetings that we'll have on a regular basis. We'll have 6 sessions where we will explore some of the deeper, meaningful questions in our life in groups of 8 to 10 people. These will be facilitated by a longer-time member and skilled facilitator. This is a great way to get to know other people within the congregation. Coming here Sunday, there's so many of us here, this is a more intimate group, so we can really share and explore these important questions in life. If Dee Adams, who's raised, she will be collecting signatures afterwards in the fellowship time. Next Sunday at 1:30, the Reverend Dr. Deborah Poblance is going to be here. Deborah came and visited us about 4 years ago, a very difficult time in the congregation. We had had a series of misconducting clergy, and she came and did some really important work in exploring our history there. Deborah has been speaking to me for a while over the last couple of months, and she's really been impressed by the work that Wildflower has done around that. So she wants to come and learn from us what worked and so that we can help other congregations. That was a very tough time for Wildflower. We are probably, talking of trauma, we are probably stronger for it, but many of the people here helped us through it, and we want to give our knowledge and expertise so that other congregations can benefit. So that will be next Sunday at 1:30 to 3:30 in the community room after worship. So I'm really excited to have Deborah back. She's an expert. She is a wonderful person, and she can help us so much and help other congregations so much in difficult times. And one final reminder, hopefully see you at the fundraiser at 5:30 today. Please rise in body or spirit for our second hymn, number 34, Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire.
About 10 years ago, A friend of mine had a baby who died after just a few days of life. As you can imagine, even 10 years and another child later, that first baby is still with her every moment of every day. But you would never know this from an ordinary interaction with her. We all have our secret or not so secret scars we carry with us. Each of those scars stands as its own uniquely lived experience. Each one, whether seemingly large like my friend's trauma or seemingly small, remains branded on our hearts, usually hidden by the trappings of daily life, by clothes and fine thank you and use, and the demands of bills to pay or dependents to care for. If only we could see through all of that and actually see the beatings our souls have taken, I'm sure we would all be so very, very much kinder to each other. I learned about the invisibility of trauma in 2002, the day I found out the baby I was carrying was dead at 13 weeks. Bursting with enthusiasm to hear that first resonant thump, thump, thump through the ultrasound, I was obviously crushed when the technician found silence. I was a teacher back then, and probably only another teacher would understand that I went to school after that appointment to send my substitute away and finish teaching my classes. I distinctly remember walking through the halls of laughing, shouting teenagers, feeling as if I were a million miles away, hearing everything through a tunnel, completely invisible to everyone around me. I remember the librarian greeting me with chipper pleasantries and my mute inability to respond as I made my way to the copy machine. Mechanically, I went about my routine. After trauma, the routine can save us. My friend who lost her baby speaks of forcing herself to go to the grocery store. The surreal experience of watching everyone around her go about their normal, everyday business, all while knowing that her everyday would never be normal again. She remembered watching people agonize over shopping purchases, the harried looks on people's faces, the dizzying array of colors, the tabloids shouting at her in the checkout line. She felt like an imposter in the midst of all that normalcy, but it also grounded her. And who knows what invisible damage those around my friend were carrying that day in the store? The irony about the isolation we feel in the face of trauma is that so few of us have not experienced it. It is a great unifier among us. And when I try to see through the exterior shell of others and imagine the likely similar history of pain that lies beneath, it softens me and helps me feel greater connection to others and a genuine loving kindness. Softening in the face of trauma is a brave act. Later in my life, when I was mourning the death of my mom, my friend who had lost her child shared a poem to encourage me to soften, to bravely lean in to my vulnerability. She handed me a copy of the poem Wild Geese by Mary Oliver, which had comforted her in some of her most difficult times, and I wanted to share it with you today. If you're interested in reading the text, it's number 490 in our hymnal. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about your despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things.
There's a story from the Buddhist tradition of this young woman living in the village. She has a very happy life. And then she meets the partner of our dreams. They get married, and they have a young child. And everything is great. She could not be happier. And then, tragically, the young child takes ill and dies. So she goes round to the village and says, how can I bring my child back to life? What can I do? And the villagers say, go and see the Buddha. So she goes to see the Buddha and says, I would want you to bring my child back to life. How can you do that? He said, I can do that, but you need to help me. He says, go bring me mustard seeds from people in the village. And the woman thinks, that's easy. This is India. Everyone has mustard seeds in their kitchen. And they said, but only bring the mustard seeds will only help if they come from a family that has not known tragedy. So the woman goes to the first house and asks the person, says, have you got mustard seeds? And he said, well, of course. Have you as a family known tragedy? And he said, well, of course, you were at my grandfather's funeral not 6 months ago. So she goes to the next house. And he said, have you got mustard seeds and have you not known tragedy? He said, oh, I've known tragedy. My daughter is severely ill and I don't think she's going to last through the day. She goes to the next house and says, have you not known tragedy? And he said, oh, myself, I've got a terminal illness, and I don't think I'm going to last beyond 6 months. And the woman realizes that everyone has experienced tragedy. Everyone has experienced trauma. And she goes back to the Buddha and thanks him for that lesson. And I think of the story of Sharon just shared with us of how she was there and we did not know the tragedy. People did not know the tragedy that she had just experienced. And I had a similar experience in Amsterdam airport when I was flying home because my father was seriously ill. And I called my mother to say I'd be home in a couple of hours. And she informed me that my father had just died 20 minutes previously. And I remember walking through Amsterdam airport and all the people were bustling as they do, buying coffee, buying pastries, screaming at their children. And I was thinking, do you not know my father just died? Of course, there was no reason they should. We are so oblivious to what's going on in other people's lives. We have no idea who arrives in the sanctuary on a Sunday morning with the pains they carry, the traumas they have experienced that still impact them. Traumas leave a profound imprint on our memories and our minds, regardless of the trauma. So as an exercise we're going to try today, in your insert, your space at the bottom, and there's nothing in the back, so you can tear this off. During the next song, which the choir is going to sing, which is Everybody Hurts by REM, I invite you, if you're willing, to write an experience or trauma or a struggle that you are currently having or have had in your life. Later in the service, we will collect these, if you're willing, and Sharon and I will read these out anonymously. Because one of the first steps in dealing with trauma is recognizing that we have it. Because the body is very good at hiding things from itself, especially painful experiences. After a traumatic experience, the brain changes, especially around the memories. And in post-traumatic stress disorder, when I worked with a lot of veterans, I had it, they weren't just remembering the experience. They had all the visceral feelings of the traumatic event. It wasn't just a memory. The senses were triggered by it. If you want to write something down and don't want us to read it out, please, but you still want to submit it, write, please do not read, and we will not read it. But we think it would be really helpful to hear these spoken out in this sacred space and for others to hear the struggles that are in this room today. I invite everyone to tear the slip off and submit it in the offering baskets that Sharon and I will be bringing around during the offering. That way it will help preserve anonymity for those who would like it. I understand this can be triggering for some people. Please know that you can talk to me or others, and I'll also be available after the worship service for anyone who would like to share their experiences with me in private. I invite you now to join me in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and love, Spirit of this community gathered here today, we know everybody hurts. Everybody seeks love, connection, and caring. And sometimes that can feel far away from us. We are thankful for this community who is here, who tells us they love us and there's nothing we can do about it. We are loved, we are cared for. We also know that as people we have hurt others, often needlessly, often because of our own egos, and we seek to transcend that. We apologize for those times we have hurt others and seek to make amends. We are human. And our humanity calls us to often hide our pain, hide our struggles, hide our suffering. But in doing that, we hide those other feelings that allows us to be fully human, that feeling of celebration, the feelings of joy, the feelings of deep, deep caring for others. Our human spirit is resilient, is strong, is courageous. May we find the strength, may we find the courage, and may we find the strength to overcome whatever obstacles we have experienced in our life. And may we become more human today than we were yesterday, and more human tomorrow than we are today. And may this community provide the foundation of strength and courage and connection to help us through the dark days and help us celebrate the joyful days. I invite you to join me in silence. Blessed be and amen.
One important way we come together as a community is by joining our financial resources, which we do now through our offering. Please give as generously as you are able. If you are visiting with us today for the first time, please let the basket pass, as your presence here is gift enough. Thank you in advance for your generosity. Also, we acknowledge the brave vulnerability of your reflections on trauma, both written and held in your hearts. In addition to the offering baskets, Brian and I will be coming around with separate baskets to collect the reflections you have written.
Psychologists say that a lot of who we are comes from our earliest experiences. Well, I'm sorry I don't remember our earliest experiences, because my first memory that I can remember is a traumatic memory. I was about 4 years old, and we were playing in the neighborhood, and it was a kind of rough neighborhood, shall we say. But this 11-year-old boy got really angry with me, and I cannot remember the reasons, but he climbed one of these old tent poles with the kind of metal spikes that we used to hang tents over. We put through the holes, and we'd all have to hold it, and it was a real struggle to put up tents. We grabbed that, and he threw it at me. and it buried into my left knee. And I've still got the scar to prove it. And in preparing for this worship service, when I was thinking about that, I would still get warm tingling in my knee. Now, I don't remember anything that happened after that, but I can still remember the expression in that young boy's face of anger, determination as he threw it. I can't remember anything that happened afterwards or before, but that is the fragment of memory, and that is how trauma works. You have these fragments of memory. You do not have this clear linear path of what happened. Now, I had a loving family, and my brother was there, and I got taken care of, and I would love to blame my knee for my lack of a professional sports career. I don't think that was the reason. I think it was more due to a lack of skill. But, you know, that is one of my earliest memories. And when I told my mother and father about that earliest memory, they were so sad. Because they thought, we had so many great memories with you, but that is what I remember. And what happens is, with trauma, it often pushes other memories out the way. And that is all what we can, all we can remember. But one of the keys that Bessel van der Volk, he's a trauma psychiatrist, and he's got a wonderful book called The Body Keeps a Score. I thoroughly recommend it. And a lot of what this service, the title of it, comes from that book. And he says the two most important phases in recovery are noticing the triggers and then start exploring what's going to happen next. And I don't know what my parents did after that event, but I grew up to be more or less fine. Though I still have triggers. Whenever I see a metal spike like that, I get this tingling in my knee and I get anxiety. That was when Sharon was talking about her miscarriage. That was a trigger for me as well, because my partner and I, we also lost a baby at 10 weeks when we went to the ultrasound to get the first ultrasound, and there was no heartbeat. And I remember the look in my partner's face, Natalie, when the nurse started panicking, and we were looking at each other, and I remember that feeling. And I can picture her, and I don't remember much afterwards. And I think Sharon was right on when she said, after we found out it was dead or it never developed a heartbeat, it wasn't sadness. It was numbness. It was complete numbness we felt afterwards. We kind of walked out. And then, of course, we had shared the news. This was going to be our first child. We were really excited. We'd shared with all our friends. And so we had to go back through that almost re-traumatizing of letting them know, no, I'm sorry, the baby died. But what came out of that was the great secrets around miscarriages. Like, one in three pregnancies end in miscarriages that we found out. And one of our close friends, one of Natalie's best friends, told her that, well, she had had two miscarriages but never talked to anyone about it. One of her other friends, her mother, had three miscarriages and had only ever spoken to her husband about it. And so much of that secrecy recreates this trauma in many of us. And that's why we're hoping that the following exercise that we do is by at least acknowledging it, hearing the traumas in the room, hearing that we're not alone in our trauma, and hearing that some people might share the same traumas that we do will help us connect, because it is part of life. And the tragedy around trauma, it represses many of our emotions, many of our senses. And that is what makes us fully human, and that is why this is a spiritual and religious issue. Because anything that thwarts our full humanity, anything that thwarts our potential, is a religious issue. And I believe trauma thwarts our potential. So let's recognize the trauma that we've experienced in our life, and let's start exploring what we shall do next. I'd like to invite Sharon forward, and we're going to read the expressions. I get the big basket.
I am finding it harder every day to keep up my busy lifestyle.
My 94-year-old mother, living alone in another city, fell and was found by a stranger and taken to the ER.
Being the primary caregiver for my dad with stage 4 lung cancer when I was 22, he died within 3 months of diagnosis.
Watching my husband die quickly and so very slowly over 3 weeks, then putting his body in the ground.
I spent 2 years in Iraq as a medic, caring for the wounded and dying.
I grew up with a child molesting grandfather and a mother who would not stop it.
My husband has been unemployed for over 2 years. I am currently battling cancer. Prayers are welcome.
My mother's personality changed dramatically when I was 5, and I began aiming to perfectly please. 10 years later, I learned she'd been raped by a group of strange men. Still adjusting.
We had a fire in my son's room that started at 1:30 in the morning. We were okay, but it has impacted us all.
My brother's suicide in 1989 was devastating.
Worrying about my mom as she struggles through severe depression.
I am a childhood incest survivor.
I am grateful for the children I have birthed and mourn the 3 children lost to miscarriage.
My mother died when I was 15. I was kidnapped when I was 22.
An abusive former partner involved with ties to murder and corruption has been stalking me for 8 years now.
My aunt hung herself.
The suicides of my sisters are with me, especially in February and March. The months they died. Time, talk, and loving support have led to some equanimity in my spirit, and I can find joy once again.
Having my husband walk out on our family when I was 7 months pregnant with complications.
My dad was a schizophrenic. It was terrible to watch his struggles and very isolating. This week is the anniversary of his death, and I am missing him.
Losing my mother after years of her struggling with mental illness and addiction.
I was date raped in 1966. Only a few years ago did I seek help with the pain of that trauma.
I just feel empty inside.
Loss of firstborn who died 4 minutes after birth.
My own experience with my mother's neurotic, volatile behavior was difficult, but worse was watching my brother, already developmentally fragile, being frequently driven over his edge, hanging his head, and perhaps increasing the brain damage that still limits him. I could not protect him.
the Eliza wildflower events, and other ministerial misconduct.
My mother was murdered by my stepfather. I spoke with him just after, and he told me.
My niece Sarah passed away at 17 years old.
Ongoing trauma of visceral anger directed at me, trying to cope with this part of a new, very challenging job.
When I was a child, I was sexually, emotionally, and physically abused by my stepfather. My mother did not protect me.
My brother killed himself at 23. I lost a baby at 6.5 months after carrying her dead for the last 6 weeks. My granddaughter's half-brother hung himself and is currently in a paralyzed state and can communicate with no one.
My father has Parkinson's disease and has refused to let my sister or I help and will not speak to either of us. At the same time, my sister is struggling with her health.
Had a miscarriage, and I was the only one to feel the loss.
Verbally abusive relationship.
On May 9th, 2010, I was fired from a job I loved. This effectively led to me going on disability. It took over a year to recognize how my health had been affected by my work. At one point, I thought, I used to be BJ.
Loss of everything. Loved ones, physical health, mental health, employment, finances, happiness, and hope.
Our family's loss of my brother in an airplane crash.
I survived an abusive husband, psoriasis, drowning, 2 car accidents, family alcoholism.
In 2014, I sat in an exam room with my best friend there for a regular appointment and watched as the tech failed to find her heartbeat and waited with her, 34 weeks pregnant, for the doctor to come in and confirm her son had died. As a mum of 2 of my own children, I was watching her literally live out my worst nightmare. I was by her side when she delivered his body and was there for the days, weeks, and months as she struggled to go on. It was the darkest time of my life and changed me. I became constantly scared of losing one of my children. I became a nervous driver, always imagining the worst case scenarios. I started feeling grief, fear, anxiety, so physically having panic attacks. That left me completely debilitated. I am a different person.
All my life, I've found it difficult to forge friendships and relationships, although once made, the connection is strong. I'm now trying to maintain connections after friends move away. I'm lonely.
My mom and brother were murdered.
My mom experienced sexual abuse as a child and went through recovery when I was a kid. She was not able to be there for our family. It precipitated my parents' divorce.
My ex almost killed me while our own baby looked on and tried to get away with even though he didn't even know how to crawl yet.
Three-year abusive relationship. Still have deep scars.
When I was 24, my first husband was 28. We found out he had a brain tumor. After four surgeries, the tumor grew. He passed away.
I once faced down a serial killer and survived. Then I went into shock and lost my memory of it for about 20 years.
Still healing from being abused by my grandfather.
My daughter had a terrible accident when she was 17 and died as a result. She taught me to love.
Day by day, heart. Thank you, God, Jesus, I still feel that heart.
Unresolved feelings with my dead, abusive father have made my life an endless struggle with ruin and addiction. I have just had a series of breakthroughs.
I was drugged and raped by someone I thought was a friend.
Impact of addiction, tragic death of loved one.
Most recent, probably share with many here, the elections. Overcoming by increasing activism.
My grandfather's gone, and it hurts my grandma to grieve with her.
My friend Eddie, Dad killed himself when we were five. I didn't talk for a week.
Among other traumas, I have PTSD from the time around September 11th when I was 16 and living away from home in DC for the first time. I was the last civilian to be evacuated from the Capitol building.
Still grieving from the murder of a close friend on Halloween 2014. These are the experiences of people in this room. And probably like myself, it's unbelievable. These are people who are able to bring themselves into our community. And it's a remarkable testament to human resilience and human spirit. And what can we do as a community to support these experiences and help people heal? I think what we can do, when people are in the midst of these tragic experiences, they often have lost hope. And I wonder if what we can be is the bearers of hope, the containers for hope, and the vehicle of healing, of listening to people through these experiences. And for those of us who have had these traumatic experiences and who are on the path to recovery, perhaps we can empathize and listen. We heard many tragic experiences that were shared in this room. And to see our own pain reflected in the tears of another is a holy communion. And a religious community does not turn away from such suffering, but we do not leave that suffering as the last word. We can be a community of healing and a community of recovery and a community that just witnesses to the suffering that is a part of our life. I invite you to take a moment of silence. With thanks for the courage and vulnerability of everyone here, may we find the strength, courage, and healing to carry on. Will please join me in the final hymn. We'll sing Spirit of Life. Can you remember the number? Okay. 1, 2, 3. You may stand or you may remain seated as you wish. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your courage, for your vulnerability. We have extinguished the chalice here, but may we take with us the warmth of community, the fire of strength, and the spark of courage for the days ahead. Please join us for refreshments in the room to the left. I think many of us are in need of refreshment at this time. But thank you. Go with love, go in love. Blessed be and amen.